You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Ryan gets a couple of big blocks, and Shakir Ryan could go. Shakir Ryan will go. Oh my goodness, is this guy fast? Goodbye, touchdown. Nick Arbuckle trying to make his way, and he fumbled the football, and it is picked up, and this could go, and will go, Delvin Bro, touchdown! And here's a pick, and Larry Dean looks like he has a pick six, touchdown, Hamilton!
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, Vontae Davis, a player in the NFL, signed with the Buffalo Bills in the offseason, abruptly retired at halftime of the Bills game against the LA Chargers yesterday, or on Sunday, depending on when you're listening to this. Mike, do I have to worry that you are going to up and retire in the middle of the podcast this week?
Well, first of all, you saying the LA Chargers, it still sounds weird to me. It'd always be the San Diego Chargers to me, but... No, I think if I didn't quit halfway through the game, the 60-1 game against the Stampeders, you know, if we actually went through a whole podcast talking about that debacle, I think you're safe. I don't think I'm going to be walking away in halfway through this one.
Oh, that's a huge, huge sigh of relief. Trying to come up with a replacement level co-host at this point in the season when, you know,
you can't replace me.
I agree. I can't. Yes. Your salary for the season has been guaranteed. Everyone's locked in their contracts. No one's getting cut. I'd be running solo, and ain't nobody want to listen to me talk by myself for an hour about anything. So
no,
I need you here. So
not.
Please don't pull a Vontae Davis on me. Please stick with the show, at least through the season. When free agency hits in the offseason, maybe I can find someone who will be, you know, half as good as you are. But even then, I think I'm in trouble if you leave.
Yeah, I'll finish my contract. Don't worry about that, Josh.
All right. So we did a poll last week to officially bestow a nickname upon the Ticats secondary. The options were my chosen name of No Fly Zone versus your fan pick name of Restricted Airspace. And Mike, you won. Restricted Airspace won the vote 56%. I was a little surprised that I usually win these things, so it was a little shocking to see you win. So congratulations on that, but I think anyone who was online last week will know that we have kind of been usurped, and I think it was the same day we released last week's show, the Ticats themselves put out a graphic talking about how good the Hamilton pass defense has been, and they titled it No Fly Zone. And then the very next day, the CFL's official website published an article talking about the Ticats pass defense. And the title featured the phrase, No Fly Zone. So, Mike, despite Restricted Airspace winning our poll, it looks like the universe has spoken, and No Fly Zone, my choice, is the name that we will have to use. I'm sorry, pal. I can't go against – I know our listeners wanted Restricted Airspace, but the world at large seems to want No Fly Zone, and I think that carries more weight, pal. Sorry.
Well, I'm still considering this a win, Josh, because I don't get many wins, so I'm going to tuck this W in my belt strap and move forward. I'm pretty happy that it came out my way, even though I didn't come up with it. You know, it should be technically the people who came up with it. It's their win, not mine.
Yeah, but you backed it, so I'm saying it counts.
All right, cool.
Speaking of getting wins, or I guess in this case not getting wins, man, our Hamilton Ticats fell to the Calgary Stampeders. Once again, 15 straight now, the Ticats have lost to Calgary. I don't even know what to say about this one, man, but this was one of maybe the weirdest football games I've ever watched. 71 total points scored in this contest, but 5 touchdowns were scored by someone other than the offense. We saw a punt return touchdown, a kick return touchdown, an interception return touchdown, 2 fumble return scores, 1 on special teams, 1 on defense. I have never seen anything like this before. Mike, what did you think? Like, I know they lost 43-28. We'll get into that. But, man, this was a weird game to watch, no?
It was quite wacky. I mean, yes, they lost, but it was a very interesting game to watch, to say the least. Not a lot of offensive firepower except for a couple plays by Calgary. But yeah, I mean, they had a third down sneak that was fumbled and returned for a touchdown. You don't see that very often. Special team recovery for a touchdown. You already mentioned it all, but to see all those touchdowns come not from the offensive side of the ball was very, very strange, to say the least.
So speaking of the offense, I think that's the main thing we got to talk about this week, and it's the lack of offense from the Hamilton Tiger Cats. When a team gets three touchdowns from the other two units on the football team, Mike, I feel like they should win. When you get 21 points scored by not the offense, I feel like you should win that football game no matter what else happens. And the Ticats didn't, and I think this loss falls squarely on the offense, who I think put up probably their worst performance of the June Jones, Jeremiah Mazzoli era. 267 yards of net offense. Calgary had 436. Like I mentioned, they didn't score a single touchdown on offense. And I thought there was some truly awful play from the offense in general, but especially from the quarterback position. And I thought there was some problems with play calling. And you look at the team and you look at the offense going into this game, and what's the one thing they were missing? It was Speedy B. Brandon Banks missed the game. That was a huge story right prior to the game. I think it was a couple hours early. Word came, I think it was Dave Naylor that broke that story saying Banks wasn't going to play. Man, is this offense night and day different when Speedy's not in there, eh?
Yeah, he lends a big helping hand, that's for sure. I mean, pretty much Jeremiah Mazzoli's go-to guy this season. So to have him out was a big loss. But, you know, when people go down, other players have to step up. And I just didn't feel that any of the receivers really did. I mean, Luke Tasker had the most yards, 6 receptions for 60 yards. But that's not really a huge game. And Mike Jones only had 4 catches. Terrence Tolliver only had 3. You know, Lucier had 4, but only for 22 yards. So I felt like the running game wasn't there either. They didn't pound the rock like they have in the past 2 or 3 games. Alex Green only had 9 touches for 51 yards, and Thomas Erlington had 3 carries, and Jeremiah Mazzoli ran the ball 3 times for only 4 yards. So just overall, a very poor performance. I thought the offensive line wasn't great. I thought Mazzoli had a very, very tough time against the Stampeders defense, which is, you know, par for the course. I mean, they just can't seem to figure out this Calgary defense, just like they couldn't figure out the Saskatchewan defense. So we're having a tough time against top-end defenses in this league, and it's going to be tough down the stretch here because we don't play Calgary again, we don't play Saskatchewan again, but there's a couple of teams that are in top 4, top 5 defenses that we play, and I'm a little concerned.
Well, and the thing is, too, there's a pretty good chance that Saskatchewan or Calgary is going to be who the Ticats face if they get to the Grey Cup. Now, obviously, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but they don't play well against top defenses. Yeah, the Ticats scored 28 points in this, but like we talked about, 21 of those came from the bloody – or was it – I know, it wasn't even 21 because Hirolahu missed one of the extra points, so they got 20 points – from special teams and defense. You can't rely on that. Like, I know Saskatchewan's out there scoring a bunch of points on defense and special teams, and they're blowing the doors off with that, but it's not sustainable. Like, in a game where your defense and special teams spot you 3 touchdowns, you need, what, statistically average offense? If this offense could put together 2 touchdown drives, they win this football. Like, to me, this loss, and looking back on this game, there's no one to blame. Yeah, now there's other areas of the team we'll get into that weren't great, but I think this loss falls squarely on the offense. And I think Jeremiah Mazzoli needs to take a lot of blame for this. And I think this is a good time to get into sort of the things we like to dislike. And I'd like to start with the dislikes. And I'd like to start with Mazzoli, Mike. And we here at this show, you and I both love Jeremiah Mazzoli. We're quick to praise him when he plays well. We are, you know, Mazzoli defenders. We are guys that go out there, and when people are crapping all over him, we'll say, hey, but look at this, look at that. But I think he's got to take his lump for this one because I thought he was awful. I thought he made poor decisions on the 2 plays that led to the pair of picks that Calgary had. I thought he never got into a rhythm. His numbers were pedestrian by even anyone's standards, 23 of 37 for 210 yards and 2 interceptions. His play was subpar. Like, this was just – this might have been Jeremiah Mazzoli's worst game as Hamilton starter, and that includes the tough games he had against Saskatchewan, because they put up yards and they put up points in this one. this might have been the worst I've seen Mazzulli play since he was installed as a starter last Labor Day.
Yeah, and you mentioned the numbers. I'm looking at one number in particular. His longest pass was 19 yards. I mean, that's very out of the ordinary for this offense to not have those long passes, you know, stretch the field. But I know that Banks being out hurts that a lot, and we've had a lot of injuries receiver-wise, you know, Chris Williams, Jalen Saunders, Brandon Banks. It's too bad that you couldn't squeeze in one of the guys that we signed, you know, either Mark Quay or Chad Owens. I know Chad got hurt, but it would have been nice to see one of those guys on the field. Maybe they could have helped out. But I totally agree. Jeremy Mazzulli had a very, very bad game. He just was not productive. He looked confused. He always looks confused against the Calgary defense. I don't know what they're doing out there. I know they're a very good defense, but we thought that Hamilton's offense was one of the best in the league. And you look at what the Eskimos did to the Stampeders. They put up a lot of points on them, and Saskatchewan put up a lot of points on them. We just cannot figure out this defense, and it's very, very frustrating.
You dig into the numbers a little bit more too, Mike, and that 19-yard long, that came on a pass to Sean Thomas Erlington, who had one catch for 19 yards in this game, and he picked up 14 yards after the catch. So even his long pass was a 5-yard pass that was only got 19, because like, that's not working downfield. Now, he didn't have a ton of time. He had pressure on him, but he made those mistakes, those boneheaded where he's, like you said last week, he's running backwards, he's thrown off his back foot. I can live with that never say die attitude, because that makes him the player that he is, and the occasional interception on plays like that is okay. But I wish we'd see more from him is knowing time and place. The defense in this game was playing pretty well, especially early. They were getting Calgary off the field. Field position in this game was flipped until Mazzulli threw his first interception. Calgary was starting inside their own 25 or 20-yard line on almost every drive in the first quarter. They weren't picking up first downs. Hamilton was getting great field position. They get scores on the defense with the Larry Dean pick six. Like, the defense is doing its part to keep the team in this, and then Mazzulli throws an interception. That sets up a Calgary score. Like, he's playing hero ball on these two interceptions, and I think they cost the team. And like, the gunslinger mentality that he has, I love it. It's entertaining to watch, but I think he needs to know when to be that guy and when not to be. And against Calgary in this game, with how Hamilton's defense was playing at the time, I think he could have afforded to be a little more cautious. And I think, again, no game is won or lost on any single player, but with the way Hamilton was performing early in that game, if Mazzulli doesn't throw those interceptions, this is a much different football game. That's what got Calgary. That first interception is what got Calgary back into this game.
Yeah, and I remember one play he was about to get sacked, and he just kind of underhanded threw the ball up in the air, and he's lucky that that ball was not picked. Mm-hmm. Or even I forget if there was an intentional grounding penalty on the play or not, but yeah, the poor decisions are, you just can't do that against a team like Calgary, and you have to score offensively when you have the chance. You can't just let these guys hang around, because if you do, they're going to score points in the third and fourth quarter. They're going to run away with it, and they just can't seem to do that against this team, and it frustrates me so much. I hate them so much. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I really do. I really hate Calgary. I'm going to say something crazy, and I might get poop thrown my way.
Send your hate tweets too.
Yes, Mike_Tigat. I hate the Calgary Stampeders more than I hate the Toronto Argonauts at this point in time. Because, listen, Toronto's not an enemy right now. I know they're always an enemy, but they're 3-8. You know, they don't beat us every time we play them. You know, it hasn't been 14 years since we beat them. So I know I'm over-exaggerating there, but I hate Calgary so much. I just want to get that out there.
It's like the big brother always beating the little brother at basketball. Mm. And you might have a rival friend on this block that you play a lot closer, you're winning back and forth, or sometimes you go on a run, sometimes they go on a run. But this is the taller kid, the bigger kid, the stronger kid, just swatting away your shots every single time. And every time you think you're getting close, they dunk on your head. That's what this is. The Calgary Stampede has been dunking on the Ticats' head for years now. I understand the frustration, dude. I really, really do. Speaking of frustration, I was so frustrated with the play of Liram Hirilahu in this game. He left 4 points on the field, and while ultimately when you look at the scoreline, Calgary wins 43-28, it doesn't really matter. But man, it's just like, you bring in this kicker, you sign him to a big money contract, he's brought in to kind of solidify the kicking game, and he's missing these routine kicks. He's kicking the ball out of bounds on kickoffs, he's missing extra points, he's missing field goals. And the Ticats offense put together one of their only decent drives of this game, and they look like they're about to take the lead going into halftime. I think they kicked a field goal. So Hirelahu kicks a field goal, puts them up. On the very next play, the ensuing kickoff, Hirelahu kicks the ball to bounds. Calgary gets good field position. They throw a deep ball down the field, gets them into field goal range. They kick the field goal, and Calgary's going into the locker room up 20-19. I don't know the numbers, Mike, because I don't think there's anything anyone tracks. And maybe it's something I should go look back on and just watch all the kickoffs and punts that Hirelahu's had throughout the season. But it seems to me that he gets flagged for an illegal kick, either on a punt or a kickoff, way more than anyone else. Like, I'm starting to think, I know he's Canadian and that helps, and that allows another American on the roster another part, but he was brought in to sort of, there's no kicking competition. We're not worried about that. But the last 2 years we've had the kicking competition that got us Brett Maher, who is now in the NFL kicking field goals for the Dallas Cowboys. It got us Sergio Castillo, who, if he had not torn his ACL last year, is probably still the kicker for this team. And I think both those guys in the years they were here have been better than Hirelahu has. What's the point of paying this guy all this money if he's missing all these kicks?
Yeah, that kick out of bounds before the half was just – you just can't do that. I mean, how does that happen? The field is 65 yards wide. I mean, just kick it in the middle and we'll get to halftime, and we go to halftime with a lead against the Calgary Stampeders, the undefeatable Calgary Stampeders. That mistake is unexcusable in my eyes. It just – I tore my hair out when that play happened.
I watched
and, of course, they throw a bomb that's like 50 yards. Oh, my God. It was so
I watched him when he kicks off. He moves the tee to the very edge of the hash closest to the sideline, and that's where he kicks. And it's saying constantly going out of bounds is hyperbole. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens way more than it should. Move that sucker in 10 to 15 feet, and then you're kicking it deep, and you're pinning him to the sideline, but it's not going out of bounds. Like, it's the going at about it's the shanked punts. It's the missed. He missed an extra point in this game, man. He misses a field goal. Like, these are the little things that lets a team like Calgary doesn't beat themselves very often, but gave the ball up a lot in this, and the offense and the special teams were there. Like, it was there for the taking. I know the score makes it look like a really lopsided loss, but this game was there for the taking until probably 7 to 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Like, this was a pretty even game. I think it was 32-25 at one, maybe. I can't remember the exact score, but it was like, this game is not despite all the mistakes, this game is still well within reach. And then all these mistakes start happening. The defense suddenly can't stop anything. And you look at it and you go, Calgary won by 2 score. Like, it's almost similar to the game they played earlier this year, where it's like you look at the score and you go, man, but in watching that game, they were so close, and it was one or two mistakes. In that one, it was the interception late in the game. In this one, there's a plethora of them that we're going to get into. But I don't know. The kicking game is just really starting to get to me, because for all those years when we had Justin Medlock, it was, I don't worry about it. Then we worried about it with Brett Maher, but then he was pretty darn solid. And then we worried about it with Sergio Castillo, and he was pretty darn solid. Like, we got to the point this season with both those guys where at a certain time we stopped worrying about it. Maybe they'll miss a kick here and there, but it's not the end of the world. They've been consistently reliable. Hirelahu has not been consistently reliable, and yeah, he's made some big kicks, kicked some game winners, but I don't know. When he goes on the field, I get nervous. When he goes on the field for kickoffs, I get nervous, and that should never be the case.
No, a professional, you shouldn't get nervous on kickoffs, that's for sure. But we beat up on the offense. We beat up a little bit on the special teams. Now, do you want to beat up a bit on the defense? Because I got things that I don't.
Okay, you know what? I just want to talk about one more thing on the offense, then we can beat up on the defense, and it's something quick.
Okay.
Why did they kick a field goal when they were down 12 points with 7 minutes left when they were on, like, the 5-yard line? What? You're still down 2 scores, whether you get the field goal or, like, what were they possibly thinking there? Do you have an answer for me, Mike? You're a genius. What's going on?
I mean, 7 minutes is a lot of time. You take it down to, you score a touchdown, you kick a field goal, and now you're up. But I'm with you, okay? You go for the touchdown, you make it a 1-score game. If you don't get the touchdown, maybe you stop them deep in their end, you get the ball back quickly. I don't understand that call. You got to go. And you think June Jones would be going for it in that case. He's like, he lives on the edge. At that moment, he did not, obviously.
Well, and the thing is, too, let's say the defense gets a 2 and out. You don't score a touchdown. You throw a screen pass or you throw a short pass let's just say you don't get any yards. I think they're on like the 6 or 7 yard line. You don't get any yards. Calgary goes out there. You hold them to no yards on their play. They're punting from their own end zone. They're probably conceding the safety. Now you're down. You're still down 2 scores, but now you're down 10 getting the ball back instead of down 9 giving the ball up. Like, I don't know. It seems like in that situation, you take the chance.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to punch it in and then see what happens from there. But to take the 3 when you're so close to, you know, and then maybe if you score the touchdown there, then everything's rolling in your way and you start playing better on offense and we go for the touchdown to win the game. You just never know. But to take the 3 to be down by 9, it's a bit of a head scratcher for sure.
All right, let's give the gears to the defense, Mike. Have at her.
Well, the run defense, man, like all season long, we've had some good games against the run. You know, we held James Wilder Jr. in check, but he's not good at all. So, so the run defense, I mean, it just seems like they just right up the middle every time. Big gains. That last drive by Calgary, what was it like? 7-minute drive, 6-minute drive, pretty much took all of the clock. Like the clock went right down to 0 pretty much. We had no chance after that. You knew they were going to run the ball, and they did run the ball most of the time on that drive, and we just couldn't stop it. The run defense is really bothering me. I mean, the secondary has been really good this year, but the run defense has been crap, and the pass rush has been crap. I don't know what's going on. We have a lot of talent on that defensive line. They're just not getting pressure on teams.
I honestly, I don't know what to say because this has been a problem since week one. We've watched this run defense get gashed. We've watched this team not get pressure on the quarterback. And that's how you lose football games. It's as simple as that. You have to be like, when everyone knows you're going to run, how you give up runs of 15, 20 yards is beyond me. And I think this defense has done a lot of good this year, but we're getting to that cold weather where teams are going to want to pound the rock. And if you want to pound the rock against the Ticats, it's proven that you can do it. Look, we got games coming up where Jeremiah Johnson is going to be in the backfield, where William Powell is going to be in the backfield. You know, James Wilder Jr., who you said, and I quote, is not very good. They're going to be playing some elite level running backs here, some guys that are at the top of the charts when it comes to rushing yards. If they can't stop the run, they're not going to win very many football games the rest of the way.
Nope. And the deep ball. Ooh. Yeah, killed them deep ball this game. They dare teams to go deep. And a lot of the time this year, it hasn't worked. And that was one of my reasons why they would win this game. And I was totally wrong on that. I mean, they had a 100-yard pass. They had a huge pass right before the half ended to set them up for a field goal. They're getting burned deep. So that was very disappointing as well.
Yeah, the deep ball on the 99-yard touchdown. We got to talk about Mike Daly, man. His coverage on deep balls this season has not been great. And I'm going to pose the question to you. Is it time to start thinking about making a little bit of a switch at safety? You know, they got a former All-Star talented player in Courtney Stevens sitting on the sidelines there doing his, you know, putting his work in on special teams. He was a starter for this
team.
And
he's been great on special teams too.
Eh?
He's been really good.
Is it time to maybe make a switch? Like, I like Mike Daly. We're fans of Mike Daly on the show, but I don't know. I don't know if Courtney Stevens gives up that touchdown pass.
Yeah. I mean, I was a proponent of Mike Daly starting at the, you know, when we were talking before the season began, and it turned out to be him as the starting safety. And he's had some ups, he's had some downs, but I think he's had more downs than ups recently. You know, he was one-on-one deep coverage. He had a chance to knock down that ball. He was right with him, and it just didn't happen. He's got burnt on a couple occasions deep this season. And I think if Courtney Stevens was back there, I think he has a bit more speed. I don't think that catch, or if the catch was made, I think there would have been a tackle made right after it. And he doesn't run another 50 yards for the touchdown. So as big of a Mike Daly fan that I am, I think it might be a time for a change, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. So I know we just spent the last 5 minutes talking about how bad the defense was, but I want to talk about how good the defense played, because this is why this game was so weird, is we're going to be praising and kind of criticizing the same people and things, and that's just how weird this game was. And I say this about the defense, this is a legitimate statement. I think if the defense scores you 2 touchdowns, I don't really give a crap what happens the rest of the game on that side of the ball. You know what I mean? Like, they put up 14 points. Now, we talked about the issues, so we don't have to get into them again, But I think if a defense scores twice, I expect my team to win. And they score twice against Calgary. I know the Stamps, again, we talked about it. They put up points, they put up yards. All the things that you highlighted about the defense that you didn't like are all 100% true. But they scored two touchdowns. And I think that's more than enough for your defense to do in a game to get the job done, even against a team like Calgary. That's still pretty darn good.
Yeah, they made some big plays, didn't they? I mean, two touchdowns. And the thing was, like, they weren't on the field, like, a ton. Like, we still won the possession time. So it's not like the defense was tired or anything like that. So, yeah, it does go both ways. Like, they did play well in some areas, and then in other areas they did not. The big plays killed us. You know, overall, Calgary's offense didn't light the world on fire, but there was a few key plays that really hurt the Ticats overall. I mean, the offense and the defense takes, you know, it's a 50-50 share of why they lost, in my opinion. Maybe 60-40.
Yeah, but my whole point is, like, you look at you play a game. If we went into this game before we even saw it, and I told you, man, they're going to get two touchdowns from the defense and they're going to get a special team score, you're thinking, with this offense, okay, they're going to win that football game. They might blow them out at that point. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the defense did enough that if the offense, like we said earlier when we were talking about Mazzoli, or just talking about the game in general, the offense would have just done a little bit instead of pretty much nothing. This game has a completely different outcome as far as I'm concerned. So, again, I'm not discounting all the things you said about defense because I agree with everything you said 100%. I just feel like in scoring two touchdowns, they did their part to get this win. And, like I said, this is why this game is so weird, because we can talk about the good and the bad on pretty much every side of the ball, and it's all right. That's a weird thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Very strange. And I'll talk about something that I liked on the defense. How about that? You like that?
Let's get to it.
All right. So I like Don Unamba. He was
beast.
He's been playing great all season, but at this game I thought he really stood out, making tackles. He had a knockdown in the secondary, I believe. He had a forced fumble. This kid's a star, and we talk about the pressure, the lack of pressure by the defensive line, and someone tweeted us and said, man, if they could just get pressure, this D line could just get pressure, this defense as a whole could be, you know, one of the best that's ever been around. And I would have to agree with him. Don Unamba was outstanding this game. What did you see from him?
Well, I saw everything you saw. He gets the strip on the Delvin Bro fumble return touchdown, couple pass knockdowns in this one. One I remember, I think it was again on a blitz. He's coming in. He's not going to get to the quarterback. Mitchell throws it. He gets his hands up, knocks the pass down. But there was one thing in this game, and I didn't see it live because I was there at Tim Hortons Field, but I did see someone tweeted out afterwards, what was he doing headbutting a Calgary player? Like, all the good he did in that game, and deservedly so, he's getting the praise for that. That's bozo behavior. I know we're not naming a bozo this week, but that's, like, what kind of knucklehead does that? Like, the game, especially, I think it was on a touchdown, like, late in the game. It was, like, the last touchdown Calgary scored, the game was over. I get you're frustrated. You're getting beat again. I understand that. Headbutting a guy, though? Like, his wallet's going to be lighter by the end of this week.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's got to be a fine, at least, for, intentionally hitting someone in the head with your helmet. So, yeah, that was a bonehead move by him. But take away that, and he had a great game, I thought. And the other thing I liked were there was only three penalties in this game by the Ticats, which I found shocking when I looked at the stats.
As did
today.
I when you told me that, Al. Like,
yeah.
You said
two,
that to me.
Two were on special
three,
teams,
what?
Right?
Yeah.
Two were on special teams. One was on defense for only 5 yards. So, I mean, three penalties in a you look at Calgary. They only had eight. To have eight penalties in a game in the CFL is impressive. But to keep it under five, I mean, you got to love that.
So they play disciplined football by not committing penalties. They get scores on defense and special teams, and they still lost by more than two touchdowns. This is one of the weirdest games I've ever
seen. A lot of
it
does. It has to lay on the offense. I'm gonna admit it to you right now. It's probably 70-30 offense.
We've talked about the defense scoring. We got to talk about Shakir Ryan. And look, again, this is one of those things. He had a fumble in this game, and it was returned for a touchdown by Calgary because that's what this game was. But I feel like he provided something that Ty Cats have been missing all year, and that was excitement in the return game. His 104-yard kickoff return touchdown electrified the crowd and came right after the Stamps had just scored a TD of their own. So it's like the Calgary's trying to get back into this game. They push it to, I believe it made it a three-point lead, and then boom, right away, Hamilton takes it back. That kick return was a thing of beauty. He has the fumble, so it shows that, you know, there's still things that can get better. But I really love what I saw out of Ryan on specials, fumble aside. I really hope he gets more opportunities this season. But, man, that kick return touchdown, watching it back again on replay when I got home, man, he made a lot out of that. Like, the speed on that dude, holy smokes.
Yeah, he was flying out there. And I think if he's not pulled down by his hair on that one return, there's another big return.
Yep.
He was about to turn the corner, and then he gets yanked down from behind, which I thought – immediately was a horse collar. I didn't realize that, you know, pulling a person by his hair isn't a penalty, but, you know, you go both ways. Like, why do you have long hair like that? Like playing football. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that some guy pulled him down by his hair, because I think that would have been another huge return for this kid.
You didn't think it was a penalty. Neither did anyone sitting around me at Tim Hortons Field. There was a couple people in front of me who were, I've never seen people more angry at a game than these two were when he gets dragged down by his hair, and they're screaming obscenities. They are cursing the officials. They are booing. They're getting a bullshit chant started. Like, they were not happy whatsoever. And my buddy, he's like slyly saying, like, tackling a guy by his hair is not a penalty. Like, he's trying to say it loud enough so these guys can hear. And his wife's like, would you just shut up? Like,
right.
You can't hear it. We get it, man. Like, it's just, it was funny to be there at the time, but man, oh man, it's like when it happened, I was like, oh, he got tackled by his hair. And like, I remember years ago when it happened in the NFL, I want to say it was Troy Polamalu got tackled by his hair after an interception. And it's like, that's when I found out, man, getting tackled by your hair is legal, because it's considered part of your body, not part of the uniform. It's a choice. You don't have to have long hair if you don't want to. It looked bad. Like, it's one of those things where his head goes back and you're thinking the worst. And I'm sure an injury could come of it, but I kind of get why it's not a flag. So, like, but yeah, man, oh my God. I don't think I've ever seen a crowd that angry at a call since maybe the missed roughing the passer call on Zach Caleros in the East semi against Edmonton a couple of years ago. But man, people were pissed.
Yeah, I was pretty upset as well. Like, after I realized that it's not against the rules, like, I calmed down a bit. But, you know, I didn't know that he grabbed the hair at first. I thought it was just a straight-up horse collar. So it was unfortunate for sure.
All right, time to give out our Podsky Player of the Week this week. And this was a bit tough. There were some candidates, but I don't think there was a huge number of, like, standout candidates like we had in the last few weeks. But we still named one. And, Mike, why don't you tell everyone who it is this week?
Well, it's our first defensive Podsky Player of the Week, and it is Don Unamba. Even though he had that headbutt, he had a tremendous game. He had a forced fumble, some knockdowns, some tip passes, some pressures on Bo. He was just all over the field. So this week's Podsky Player of the Week is Don Unamba.
All right, let's talk some Ty Cats news. Wait, there is none. Okay, let's talk some CFL news. Yeah, there's none of that either. So here's what we're going to do. No news. Do you really want to sit here and talk about Johnny Manziel starting for the Alouettes? I know this isn't a live show, but I can already hear y'all yelling, hell no. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about kind of the Ticats. They played their 12th game of the year. Believe it or not, they are now at the two-thirds mark of the season. They have 6 games left in the schedule. Mike, where the hell did the year go, first and foremost?
Right. Well, it feels like it's friggin' December here, because it's been snowing for like a week. So, you know.
Well, it was 40 degrees here on Saturday at the game, and we've had our air conditioning on all week, and my toes are cold because of the air conditioning, not because of the weather. That is not me gloating. I'm just saying, what a difference Edmonton to Hamilton makes, where you have winter conditions and we're here sweating our nards off.
I know. It's crazy. It's craziness.
But anyway, the season is almost at a close. We're in the final third of the year. So let's talk about kind of the state of the Ticats and where they are after 12 games, because I feel like after six, we did this after 6 games, they were 2-4, we were kind of disappointed. Now we sit here after 12 games, they're 6-6, so they go 2-4 in that first third, they go 4-2 in that second third, they're now solidly in second place in the East, just a game behind the Red Blacks after the stinking, no good Rough Riders couldn't get the job done at home and kept us tied with them, but that's neither here nor there. So, Mike, where do you kind of, how do you feel about this team after the 12-game mark? Are you excited for what's to come in the second, the last six games of the season? You kind of apprehensive? What are your feelings?
I'm a little bit worried about these last six games, Josh, because you're looking at the teams we beat so far. We got Toronto twice, we got Edmonton twice, we had Winnipeg once, and we had Montreal once. Those are all defenses that are at the bottom of the league in the most important category that you can have on defense in total points allowed. That's kind of concerning to me. Now, Edmonton Eskimos are a very good team, and we beat them twice, but their defense is not that great. And now, the remaining six games, I mean, we have BC head back-to-back here coming up, the next two games. And I'm looking at BC's defense, total points allowed, second in the league, sacks first, interceptions first. They're near the bottom, or the bottom of the league in forced fumbles, but pass knockdowns, second in the league. The BC Lions defense are, surprisingly to me, like, they're creeping up there. They're really good defense, and this concerns me. We could lose two in a row here and be 6-8. I mean, I am worried about these last six games, Josh. How do you feel about the last six games?
Well, I'm worried now.
Yeah.
I wasn't right? Before that. Now you got me questioning what I'm feeling. Like, I look at those last six games and I see BC under 500, BC under 500, Toronto under 500, Ottawa above 500, Ottawa above 500, Montreal under 500. So I look at that and I go, okay, they got three on the road, three at home. I don't want to get too much into BC because we're going to be talking about them in the game preview, but I was pretty confident in that schedule, but your deep dive on the statistics there has me questioning what this team's going to be able to do in the last six.
So I think we might, like, this is just totally out of the air prediction. I think that we might go 3-3, you know, and that would, you know, make sense. What would that make us?
9-9.
Yeah, and that's right where the Ticats like to lay. And listen, that's not terrible. I want them to be above 500, but we look at last season, and I'm happy with that. To make the playoffs, have a chance to get to the Grey Cup, it's all good. But if we, you know, can't prove ourselves and can't put up points against these top-notch defenses, I don't know how far we're going to get into the playoffs. And if we do get to the Grey Cup and face one of these really good defenses, we might get smacked in the Grey Cup.
So what you're saying is we got to hope that Edmonton gets to the Grey Cup because Jeremiah Mazzoli is an Edmonton killer. Their defense gives up a lot of points. And that's the only way that you and I don't leave Commonwealth in tears.
That's what I'm saying, Josh. I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, you know, we lost Ottawa once, so we got to play them again. They're near the top. There's third in points allowed, middle of the pack in sacks, middle of the pack in interceptions. So I have Noel Thorpe's running that defense. It's going to be hard to beat out the Red Blacks now, I think, for first place but you never know. I mean, Ottawa looked terrible, and then they looked good against Saskatchewan. It's so hard to predict, but just the way that we played against really good defenses is worrisome.
You bring up some good points. So here's one thing I think we can both agree on. The Ticats are making the playoffs. I don't really think that that's up for debate. I think they're making the playoffs. I think they're hosting a playoff game. They're finishing no worse than second in the East. I think they have the three-game cushion on the Argos and the Owls. With six games left, they have the season series sewn up with Toronto, and they basically have it won against Montreal because of the beating they put on them. They only played two games against the Owls this year, and they walloped them back a few weeks ago. Mansell's first start, the four interceptions, blah, 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 blah. So I think barring some ridiculous collapse, I don't see the Ticats not making the playoffs. Do you at least agree with that point, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, you really threw me off with that. Because I'm looking at the schedule and I'm going, two BC games could be wins. I don't know why, but I feel like they're going to lose to Toronto. To beat a team three times in 1 year is really tough. Unless the Argos have just completely given up by that point. Maybe they pull that one out again. And then I look at the Ottawa twosome and their game back of the Red Blacks. If they can stay a game back of Ottawa heading into that back-to-back, that's what's going to be the thing that decides the division, I think. And then we're going to go into week 21 against Montreal. And it could be a meaningless game. You know what I mean? Like, it could be if the Ticats lose a season series to Ottawa and the Red Blacks have a one-game lead going to the last week of the year, Hamilton is stuck in second. So I look at that Montreal game as maybe essentially a meaningless game because, again, I think the Ticats are going to, like, well, I don't think that the Ticats are making the playoffs. Like, we don't have to couch this in any sort of terms here. They're making the playoffs, barring, like I said, something completely unforeseen, like, you know, the entire receiving core, the quarterback, all three linebackers, like, something catastrophic would have to happen for this team to not make the playoffs. And then we'd be sitting on this podcast talking about the worst collapse probably in franchise history when it comes to missing the playoffs. But now I really thought they had a shot to get first in division because I felt like their schedule was a lot easier than Ottawa. So, like we've mentioned, Hamilton's Ottawa schedule, they have Edmonton at home, followed by a bye. Then they go home to Winnipeg, at Edmonton, and then they host a back-to-back with the Ticats, and then they have the Argos the last week of the season. They still have Edmonton twice and Hamilton twice. That's a pretty tough schedule for any team. You look at the Winnipeg game, the Bombers are going to be kind of fighting for their playoff lives in that one. But, man, you bring up those defensive stats, and it really makes me wonder if they're going to drop two to the – if they drop two to the Lions, I think first place is out of the question no matter what happens in the Ottawa series. So I feel like they got to win at least one of those, if not both. And we'll get into the BC game in a second, but just sticking with this, are you saying Ticats in second in the East then hosting the East semi?
Yeah, that's my prediction. I don't think they're going to jump ahead of Ottawa. I hope I'm wrong, obviously, but I just don't think they make it.
Okay. I'm going to have to go with you on that one. Man, you made a really compelling argument, and I'm not used to that. I'm used to you being, you know, Mr. Hypothetical, and you came with the heat on this one, buddy. And
I looked up some stats. I did some homework, Josh.
It kind of blew me out of the water, but I don't know. I really hope that – I guess we'll find out this week. If they get this win in BC, I think it changes things.
And they have played well in BC historically. You know, you look at the last 10 years, even when they really stunk, they've usually it's usually been a close game or they'd win in BC. But, just looking at those numbers, like, I didn't think BC Lions defense was that good. But maybe they'll figure it out, though. You know, maybe they'll do some little quirks and Mazzoli will figure out the tough defenses and this. You will get some receivers back and that'll help it a lot. But, yeah, I got to go with like a 3-3 record down the stretch.
Okay, so I'm going to say officially they go 4-2. I'm going to say they win the last game against Montreal, even if it's quote-unquote meaningless. But I say they go 4-2, finish 10-8 overall. So why don't we look at Ottawa for a second and kind of make a prediction there, each of us. So let's just go through the schedule. We'll say win-loss. How's that sound?
Yep.
Okay, they play – their next game is this week. They're hosting Edmonton. Win or loss?
I'm going to say win.
I'm going to say win. Then they're on a bye, so nothing there. Then they host Winnipeg, win or loss?
I'm going to say the Bombers get it together, and they're gonna lose that game.
Oh, right on. Okay, then they go to Edmonton.
Yeah, that's a loss.
Okay, then they host the Ticats.
That's a win.
Okay, then they come to Hamilton.
That's a loss.
And then they host the Argos.
That's a win.
That's a win. Okay, so Mike, you got them winning at home over Edmonton, winning at home over Hamilton, winning at home over the Argos, losing on the road to Edmonton, losing at home to Winnipeg, and losing at home to the Ticats. So you got them finishing 3-3. That would put them at 10-8. So yep. I got a win against Edmonton. I got them beating the Bombers. I got them losing at Edmonton. I got them losing at home to Hamilton because if you look it up, for some reason, the Ticats play really well in Ottawa. So they don't beat them at home, but they like this series between these two teams, taking out the first year that Ottawa was here when they were the free space and the bingo card, so to speak, I think they've split every season or like whenever they play. I think the Ticats have won, aside from 2015, I think they've won at least once in Ottawa. It seems that they go to Ottawa and and Ottawa for some reason is not very good at home, which is very odd. But I think Hamilton wins in Ottawa, but then Ottawa comes back here because Ottawa doesn't lose in Hamilton apparently, and Ottawa gets the win there. And then I think in the last week of the season they beat the Argos. I got them finishing 4-2 and at 7-11. You got them finishing at 3-3 at 10-8, but you did have Ottawa
11-7.
You got them at 11-7? You said you're 3-3.
No, you do.
Yeah,
you
I have them at 11-7.
You yeah, you said 7-11.
Did I say 7-11?
Yeah,
I must have Slurpees on the brain.
Yeah, must have.
So we both kind of had the same thing. We both got Ottawa finishing first and Hamilton finishing second. So no surprise there.
Unfortunately.
All right, let's talk about this week's upcoming game. The Ticats, they get a chance now to get back over 500, heading out to Vancouver to take on the BC Lions. We've already talked a little bit about this, but we're going to talk about it some more here. This is the last game, I think this is important, this season that the Ticats will play outside of the Eastern time zone, barring a trip to the Grey Cup. So this is really the last big road trip for this team. They either go to Ottawa or Toronto to end the season. Not exactly a hard road. You always talk about traveling to the other side. That's the tough road trip. Road trips within your division, especially when they're in the same province, not so difficult. The Lions come into this one, though, Mike. They're 5-6. They put a beat down on the Alouettes last weekend. They look like they're about to get things going, but it's not all good. Travis Lule left that game against Montreal with a separated shoulder. I think the talk is he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. That's kind of a blow to the Lions because I think they're a much better team when Lule's behind center. That means Jonathan Jennings is back under center for the Lions. And, you brought it up, Ticats in Vancouver, how they play. Last year they won a game in BC, 24-23. And like you said, they've generally kind of played well out on the West Coast, even in years they didn't win. It's been a lot of close games. I think there was one game in the last little while. I think they lost like 40-13. I think it was 2016. Maybe it was 2017. Or 2015. I can't remember. They got blown out by them once, but other than that, they've been fairly, if they don't win, it's usually a one score game. And sometimes they get a couple victories there. Like it's been a fairly good place for the Ticats to play. And they've at least been entertaining games. And, and don't forget, our buddies over at the CFL fans in Toronto, they're hosting a viewing party at the Three Brewers in Liberty Village for this game. It's immediately after the Argos game who do the Argos play this week? They play the Riders. The Argos are hosting the Riders. I think that game is at 7 o'clock. Right after that, you can head on over to Three Brewers, watch Ticats and Lions game. So hit up our buddies over at CFL fans in Toronto to find out all the information there. So Mike, with all that out of the way, you get the chance to tell us now. You've kind of touched on a little bit earlier, but now you can get into it in more detail if you want to, why the Ticats will lose this week's game to the BC Lions.
Well, I think that the Lions have really picked up their game recently overall. I think they're a talented bunch out there. I just don't think all the pieces have come together yet for them. So I think they're going to have a big performance. I hope they don't, but you never know. The run defense for the Ticats has been not good. Jeremiah Johnson is an underrated running back in the league. I think he's very, very good. He'll probably have a big game because they're probably going to be handing the ball to him quite a bit since Lule's out. So that will be a big factor, I think. And I touched on the BC Lions defense. You know, I'll say the numbers again. Second in total points allowed, first in sacks, first in interceptions, and second in pass knockdowns. They're the bottom of the league in forced fumbles. But other than that, they're hovering near the top of the league. So as I said, you know, we've had a tough time against really good defenses, and they are, seems like out of the blue, a really good defense. So that's going to be a problem for the Ticats as well. And I know I mentioned that we played well in BC, but the time change is always tough. Playing in BC is always tough. So that will be one more reason why the Ticats will lose this game. But once again, I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong too. And I'm going to tell you why you'll be wrong. If all these things happen, then I think this is why the Ticats will win. The first, it's not really something that happens. I think BC's just better with Travis Lule. I think he's been kind of a Ticats killer over his career. I think his two best passing games, yardage-wise, have come against Hamilton. And I think with Lule out and Jennings in, I think the Ticats have a better chance of getting this victory. I think, you know, the Lions are already down Manny Arsenault in that receiving core, and I know they signed Devere Posey. But even if Posey was the player that everyone kind of makes him out to be, it's still difficult to integrate a guy into the offense that quickly. I just don't know without Arsenault, without Lule, if the Jennings in that Lions offense has the tools to get the job done for a full 60 minutes. Like Jennings, a little like Mazzoli, is kind of prone to mistakes. He'll make bad reads. He'll make bad throws. He'll trust his arm a little too much, or he'll throw off his back foot. And I think the no-fly zone, Mike, will make him pay for some of that. I expect, and this is, I guess, kind of a bold prediction, at least 2 turnovers for the Ticats defense in this one. And I think those are the things that will swing this game in Hamilton's favor. I think the offense, I think they're going to use the run to keep that very, very good BC pass rush at bay. Ever since the Lions acquired Sean Lemon, I think that's when this defense kind of took the turn. You got Lemon on one end, Willis on the other. I think that pass rush has been tremendous since that tandem started clicking. I believe, again, not entirely certain, but I believe BC has more sacks since acquiring Lemon than Hamilton has had this entire season. So that tells you how good that pass rush is. But I think the best way to counteract a good pass rush is to run the football and to throw screen passes. And I think we're going to see a heavy dose of the touchdown machine himself, Alex Green, in this one. I think they're going to find ways to get him the ball. They didn't do it much against Calgary. I think they do it in this one. And let's not forget, it was about a year ago from this day that Alex Green had his breakout game against BC, and I think he's going to have another stellar outing on Saturday. And lastly, Mike, I got a little bit more faith in this offense against this defense than you do. It's rare that we see this offense struggle as poorly as they did against the Calgary Stampeders. So I don't think we're going to see a back-to-back repeat of that poor, terrible, awful, whatever negative word you can think of, offensive performance. I think they're going to have a big game against the Lions D. As good as they are, I think Mazzoli gets it right. I think he's going to get – if Brandon Banks is back, I think we're going to see a lot of big plays to him. If Speedy B's not back, then I'm going to be a little concerned. But I still think the offense is going to find a way to bounce back. They're going to use the run. I think that's why they're going to win this game.
Well, I hope you're right, Josh. And if Speedy B isn't back, you got to think that Mark Quay would be in the lineup or there would be some kind of help coming in because the replacements, they're young. You know, you got Rashard Lawrence and you got Lucier, the young Canadian guy, and even Mike Jones is a young Canadian guy. You know, there's not a lot of players really to zone in on and pass to. I know Tolliver's out there. He hasn't been having the greatest of seasons. Tasker's still there, but Tasker can make every single catch. So, yeah, man, I hope Speedy B's back. I hope we get some help in the receiving core, and we can put up some numbers against the BC Lions, score some touchdowns, put up some production. I hope you're right.
I honestly hope we maybe see a little bit of Shakir Ryan in the offense. I know he was kind of like a late addition to the special team, so he didn't have a ton of time working with the offense. Even if Banks is back, I'd kind of like to see what Ryan could do because that speed, man, on that punt return or the kick return touchdown he had against Calgary, man, he showed that he's got another speed, another afterburner on him. I wouldn't be so upset to see it. Like, BC's a dome stadium, so the conditions are going to be nice and calm for the offense. There's going to be no swirling winds. If Liram Hirelahu misses a kick in this game, I might find where he lives, and I'm not going to say what I would do because I don't want to incriminate myself on a podcast, but he better not miss or he's going to get some angry tweets from me.
Yeah, he better not miss. He better not kick the damn ball out of bounds on a kickoff either or a punt. We're watching you, bud, okay? We got our eyes on you. Yes. Jinx.
Oh, well, how am I supposed to end the podcast if I can't talk?
Jinx, you owe me two. You know you're buying me a case of beer when you come out here in November, okay? We're not staying here for free, Josh.
Sorry. I got no problems buying you a case of beer. What do you like?
Beer.
Okay. You know what? We're going to hook up with our buddy from the Three Down Nation Green Cash, Joel Gasson. He's the beer guy. As soon as he heads there, obviously I'm getting there a little bit earlier than most people for Grey Cup. You got to put up with me for a couple extra days than most people would have to. And for that, I very much appreciate you. Joel gets there. I'll hit him up, say, dude, I got to get Mike some beer. Find me some good stuff. Let's go get it. I'll bring it over. We'll have a drink. We'll have a good time.
That sounds like a plan to me.
All right. So that was Podski Weave for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.